is the theory behind a new approach to working with quantum dot qubits. And that involves using a hole spin instead of an electron spin, and also applying spin echoes to try and reverse some of the decoherence. So this morning you heard all about, you heard a very long introduction about all these qubit candidates, and also we had two talks this morning by Chloe and Sophie about the quantum dot, so I'll just skip all the introduction. I'm going about, so of course, I'm approaching the problem from a theoretical point of view. And so what I'm most interested in is understanding the source of decoherence and trying to find ways to remove it. So I'm sure you're all familiar with decoherence. So you have your quantum state, you make a measurement, and then you observe the collapse of the wave function. So you go from a pure quantum state, which collapses down to a mixed state with classical probabilities. So in general, any quantum system which interacts with an uncontrolled environment is going to cause decoherence. And this causes the loss of information which is in your quantum system. So obviously, it's not good. You want to get rid of that. And before going on, I should give you a sort of basic physical intuition for what's going on in my project so that you can follow the rest of my talk. So you have your hole spin here in red, and it's bathing in a, well, it's sitting in a bath of surrounding nuclei. It's got a magnetic moment which is aligned with its spin, and so this hyperfine coupling term, which looks like this, it creates an effective magnetic field, which you can write as HZ, let's say. That is felt by the hole spin. And so that creates a torque on the hole spin and makes it precess about the z-axis. But the thing is, these nuclear spins are uncontrolled, so they're all randomly oriented. And so this hole spin feels a different effective magnetic field from each nucleus. And this creates fluctuations in the precession frequency. So what we end up getting is the hole spin being in a superposition that's precessing at different frequencies. And you know, just to give you a very rough, simple idea of why that causes decoherence, if it's not obvious already. So here, I'm starting my hole spin in the XY plane, and then I'm plotting the X component of the expectation value of the spin as it precesses and dephases about the z-axis. So here I only have 5 nuclei. So this is like adding up cosine function, well, averaging cosine functions with 5 different frequencies. And so you can see that the spin just decoheres to 0 very rapidly. And this is with 5 nuclei. So imagine in a real quantum dot, you have 10 to the 5 nuclei. Obviously, it goes to 0 on a scale of nanoseconds. But we're saved by something called the spin echo. Some of you are probably familiar with this. So if you have a spin, you can rotate it by applying a very short pulse. So either an RF pulse or a fluctuating magnetic field pulse. And you can control the length of the pulse such that you can control the angle by which you rotate your spin. So from here to here, we applied a 90-degree pulse about the x-axis, and then we can let the spin evolve under time evolution, and then so the spin is going to start precessing at different frequencies. And if you go into the rotating frame, which is rotating at the average precession frequency, then what you see is that all of these superpositions are precessing away from the y-axis here. And then if you let it go on for a certain time tau, and then you apply a 180-degree pulse, you can see that the spins which were going this way, well, they were all going away from the y-axis before the pulse, and now they're all going towards the y-axis after the pulse. So a time tau after you've applied the pulse, you get a spin echo that forms. So in this way, you've just gotten rid of all of the decoherence due to the hyperfine interaction term. So I've been talking about hole spins this whole time. So a hole is just an absence of an electron in the valence band. So you have your valence band and you remove an electron. And so you have this hole there. It's not a real physical particle. It's more of a mathematical construct. It's just instead of having to describe the motion of all of the electrons in the valence band, you just have to you define some new parameters for this hole. And then you can describe the motion of this hole. So I'm not going to go into the distinctions between a heavy hole and a light hole. But basically, every time I say hole during this talk, I mean heavy hole. And you can believe me that it's a nice 2D quantum system, just like an electron, with a few differences that you don't need to really know. So the advantage of using holes is that this hyperfine interaction is Ising, which means that the coupling is only along one spatial direction. Whereas for electrons, this hyperfine interaction is of the Heisenberg form. So it's coupled in all three spatial directions. And intuitively, it's not very hard to believe that if you have fluctuations in all three spatial directions, it's going to be much harder to get rid of than if you just have fluctuations along one direction, which can be removed easily with the spin echo. So this is our motivation for believing that the hole spin could be more coherent than the electron spin. And this is why we're studying it. Okay, so now we turn on the magnetic field along the x-axis. And this gives you the Zeeman splitting that was mentioned in previous talks that you need to perform any kind of quantum operations on your spin. And that introduces two new terms in the Hamiltonian. So on top of this hyperfine coupling term, now you have the nucleus Zeeman and the hole Zeeman, which couple the nuclear spins and the hole spin to this B field and make them precess about the x-axis. We're going to ignore the hole Zeeman term for now. We're going to assume that this G parallel is very, very close to zero, which is the case for a very two-dimensional quantum dot. And so we're going to add this term later as a perturbation because it makes the problem much more realistic. But for now, this Hamiltonian is exactly solvable, whereas this one is not. So we're just going to solve this one for now. So now we have only one new term, the nuclear Zeeman term. But this term makes the nuclear spins precess about the x-axis. So this introduces dynamics in the nuclear spins and dynamic fluctuations. So the spin echo can no longer reverse the decoherence because the nuclear spins are changing over time. Here are some results. So just to remind you, what I'm plotting is the x component of the spin. And also in an actual experiment, what you would measure is, I don't know if you can see it, this pale blue line. So what I'm actually plotting is the spin echo envelope function. But what you would measure in an experiment is the spin decaying very rapidly, then you apply spin echo, then you get a pulse, and then so on. So you can, in an experiment, you can change the value of tau between the pulses, and you can sample all of the points on this plot if you want. It's like the information is always there. It's just that in an actual experiment, you can only sample certain points. So I've got the in dark blue line is the numerical solution of because I have so many nuclear spins, I have an analytical expression, but to compute it, I need to compute it numerically. And then the red dotted line is my short time expansion, and this yields it's an approximation that I made for short time, and this yields a very simple exponential decay. And this decay time is proportional to 1 over the square root of the magnetic field. And you can see just by eye, here you have 0.01 Tesla, and here you have 0.09 Tesla. And so the decay time here is about 3 times shorter than it is here. And you can also see that this short time approximation looks to be very valid. So, okay. So then, what happens if you keep increasing B? So there's something weird that happens, which is that this signal comes back. And then if you keep increasing B even more, then eventually the signal comes back completely for a certain time. And then if you keep cranking up B even more, then the amplitude of these oscillations begins to decrease. And you can see that for B approaching infinity, this would just become a straight line. And so here I have n equals 1,000 instead of n equals 10 to the 5. And you can see that the amplitude goes as a over b times root n. So for realistic n, you wouldn't need actually such a large b to have this kind of behavior. And you don't even need this kind of behavior. You only need your signal to be back for certain times if you want to perform quantum operations. You need to know when the signal comes back. And so this is not some theoretical fantasy. Like it would actually be realistic and achievable in a lab. So what's going on here? So the way to understand it is that when your magnetic field values are small, then as you increase B, you're increasing the amplitude of these dynamic fluctuations. And so this leads to more decoherence. But then when your B is really, really large, then these fluctuations along the Z direction are starting to get sort of washed out. Or another way to explain it is that the nuclear spins are spinning, well, precessing so fast about the x-axis that it averages out any kind of fluctuations along the z-axis. And this is a phenomenon called motional averaging. So in this way, we can see that coherence times can be extended. And that's it. So in our project, we observed spin echo envelope modulation and motional averaging. And also, right now, we're working on including the whole Zeeman term. We already have the results for it, but we need to check that the higher order terms in the expansion that we made are small compared to the lowest order. And after that, we'll be done. Thank you.